I was an analyst in our investment bank, and about a year later came to the asset management business by way of someone who was in a very senior position who I met during campus recruiting. Mm-hmm. So for those young people listening, you never know who you're impressing and when you're impressing them and when they're going to remember you. And at that point, ring you up on the phone and say, come over here and meet some folks.
Welcome back to Insights Now. I'm David Kelly, Chief Market Strategist here at JP Morgan Asset Management. Over 2025, we focused our conversations on Insights Now on our research analysts across fixed income, equities, and multi-assets. The themes that permeated the discussions included policy changes out of DC, AI innovation, elevated valuations, lots of dispersion beneath the surface, and of course, their passion to sift through risks and opportunities for investors. We also discuss what our team expects for the economy and markets in 26 in our outlook entitled AI Lift and Economic Drift. So for our last episode of the year, we wanted to zoom out of markets and instead zoom in on the asset management industry, the year that was and the years that will be. Topics top of mind for investors include changing trends in investor portfolios, the incorporation of private market assets in individual portfolios, the growth of active ETFs as a go-to vehicle, technological adoption to allow more investor customization, and much more. So to dive deeper, I'm thrilled to be joined today by Andrea Lischer, Head of America's Client here at JP Morgan Asset Management. In this role, Andrea oversees $1.8 trillion in client assets across the Americas, from institutional clients to financial advisors and intermediaries. She also leads a team of nearly 500 client professionals. If you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, you can also watch along on YouTube by tuning into our JP Morgan Asset Management channel, linked to the show notes. Now let's get started. Andrea, welcome to Insights Now.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess as a starting point, what asset classes or types of investment solutions have seen the biggest inflows this year, and what sort of trends are we seeing in client portfolios?
So it's been an interesting year for sure. I would say a couple of things that we've seen across the client base here in the Americas. I think one, fixed income has really picked up steam this year in terms of client flows. Half of the top 10 of the Morningstar universe in terms of net inflows have been in fixed income. And you're seeing that not just in short duration as clients start to take a step out of cash, which we're finally starting to see those cash balances come down from high levels of 7 to 10% to like 3 to 4%. Mm-hmm. So a lot has been put to work this year, but taking a step in, but also in core, multi-sector, and even global fixed income. Mm-hmm. So that's probably been the biggest mover. Clients are still generally very overweight U.S. large cap, with large cap growth still being a very big driver of flows. But I was thrilled to see that this year, for the first time in a while, large cap international equities broke into the top 10 in terms of net new flows. Mm-hmm. I believe number 4 on the Morningstar list of net new flows. And why does that matter? Because as you know, and you have been advocating for years, many, many clients in the United States, but also more broadly in the Americas, have let their portfolios drift. The 60-40 became an 80-20, with nearly all of that in U.S. equities and a lot of that in U.S. large cap. Mm-hmm. So to see the international market start to come back in terms of client flows and getting more diversification in client portfolios is a great thing to see.
Well, and that's, you know, I think the key, first of all, I'm very glad to see all of those trends. And I think the key here is diversification, investors taking a prudent approach to just filling in some of the gaps in their portfolios. But of course, as we go into 2026, I think we're thinking about an even broader approach to diversification and the need for people to have an even broader approach. So with that in mind, what are your thoughts about private markets and having private assets in client portfolios?
So you can't look at a financial publication without seeing a lot of press or mentions of private alternatives, in particularly for the wealth market. As you know, for decades now, institutional investors have included private assets in their portfolios, some of them as a meaningful part of their asset allocation. But over the last decade, on the private wealth side, individual investors have started to leg into some of these capabilities, starting with the ultra high net worth. But now with some new democratized types of vehicles, you can access some what were reserved capabilities for the ultra high net worth at much lower minimums, which with much more accessibility to liquidity, et cetera. Now, so It is certainly a trend that is coming. It's a trend that a lot of asset managers are making a bet on. And we do believe that there is a place. It's possible in the next decade we'll see the 60-40 turn into a 50-30-20, with that 20% being a broadly diversified basket of different alternatives. But I think the one cautionary tale or cautionary kind of exclamation point I would just make sure that our listeners are thinking about is that these new democratized products are not the same. And you really want to be careful. This is a place where manager selection really matters. And there has been such a rush of product development and products put on the shelves. And one of the things that we think a lot about and that we're very proud of in terms of how we're developing capabilities is that not only do we have a century of managing money for big institutions and alternatives being a part of that, but we're also one of the industry's leading global wealth managers. And we have one of the largest 40 Act families with a 30-year plus history in ETFs and mutual funds, et cetera, including our global liquidity business. So understanding these new evergreen wrappers and how you take what once were portfolios of illiquid securities and put them into more liquid, lower minimum wrappers, clients just need to understand the trade-offs. And they do need to understand that at times they may not be able to access their money or it may be less easy to access. So risk management becomes very important. Portfolio construction becomes very important. And just knowing what managers you own and their approach becomes increasingly important.
And indeed, that's why, as you and I talk about it quite frequently, we're putting so much effort into educating investors and financial advisors on alternatives with our Guide to Alternatives, our Alternative Realities podcast, and lots of other materials just to try to help people understand it. Because you really, these portfolios are getting broader, yes, but they're getting more complicated. And particularly with these new assets, you really need to know what you're dealing with and who you're dealing with.
That's
in
right.
terms of who's managing that money.
I'm so glad you mentioned the Guide to Alternatives. You know I love everything your team does. I have since 20 plus years ago when we came out with these educational guides and really practical how-to tools. The Guide to Alternatives is a piece that every one of our clients, whether you're a large institution, a government, or in particular, a private wealth advisor or platform, they just need to have that in their arsenal. You all have done such a brilliant job making it very accessible and easy to understand. And I think the next wave of this is really the portfolio construction. How do you put together that 20%? Or even if it's a 5% allocation to alternatives, how do you put together real estate and infrastructure and private equity and private credit in a portfolio for different client outcomes? How, what does that solve for? And how does that complement what you're doing in public markets? And I think that's a really important consideration as the public market decisions and the private market decisions, they're not so different anymore.
Absolutely. And there's so many sort of a multidimensional set of attributes in these private assets. You really got to figure out how they fit into your multidimensional portfolio. And I think that's, that clearly is, you know, a big goal for everybody here, both in our business, but also among financial advisors.
Absolutely.
So another big growth area, obviously, is active ETFs. I mean, we've seen, you know, ETFs have been around for a while, but we've seen explosive growth in active ETFs, and we're obviously very committed to that. How's that? How do you feel about that in 2025 and going forward?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, I think it's one of the most exciting things happening in the industry. I recently read about $1.4 trillion are now in active ETFs, but this is still a tenth of the overall ETF market. So there's a lot of excitement. Clients, both institutional client and intermediary clients, financial advisors, are waking up to the benefits of the ETF wrapper around active management and the benefits that it can provide. There's been a lot of exciting products that have been brought into the market, really cool innovation. We've been blessed to be at the forefront of a lot of that, planting seeds over a decade ago that now have 3 and 5 year plus plus track records. And I think there's a lot more to come. Just in the past year alone, as fixed income has gotten really to the front of the radar, you asked me earlier about trends that we're seeing, we are starting to see the active fixed income ETF pick up a lot of momentum and client interest as clients across the board are realizing that when they buy passive fixed income, in most cases, they are missing out on a great deal of what is available in the fixed income markets if you have an active manager. And given how attractively priced a lot of these active capabilities are, you can have the best of active management and the best of the ETF wrapper all in one. So we think it's a super exciting space. I'm asked about it everywhere we go. And again, this isn't just from the traditional wealth market or retail. Even the largest institutional investors around the world are starting to replace what they were once doing in passive with active ETFs.
Looking for industry-leading insights on markets and the economy? Our Guide to the Markets illustrates a comprehensive array of market and economic histories, trends, and statistics through clear charts and graphs. For more information on the guide, visit our website at jpmorgan.com/GTM.
All of these exciting new products and ways of investing, they do raise complex questions. And of course, we live in a technology age, and 2025 was a year of extraordinary technological change, and that's only going to accelerate. But how do you think about technology as it impacts portfolio construction for investors?
I am amazed and excited by the speed at which the tools are getting better and better to help portfolio managers and research analysts, chief investment officers and their staffs, and even the client professionals that help translate those results into client portfolios. I'm amazed at the speed. As you know, here at JP Morgan, we spend $17 billion on technology every year. We are at the forefront of AI and technology development to help our investors and our clients have better outcomes. So I think it's just very exciting. This is maybe a bit of an adjacency to your question, but because it's less AI at this point, and I think it's more just the evolution of very smart technology, which is the ability to personalize portfolios in ways that really weren't possible at smaller bite sizes in the past. About 5 years ago, as you know, we purchased a company called 55IP, which is a fintech that enables personalized tax-smart investing at the individual security level for clients. And we can overlay that on model portfolios. You can overlay that on an individual basket of securities. You think of all of the growth in direct indexing, and we're doing direct indexing with active management as well through 55IP. So I do think also the ability to apply technology to bring more personalization, but do it at scale and do it at lower cost. And I think that's really exciting.
It's very analogous to the promise of AI in medicine, because AI in medicine is really allowing for ever more personalized, genetically focused treatments. And this is kind of, a personalized health approach to medicine using AI. And it seems like you can have the same thing for financial health using AI, which allows you really deliver personalized solutions for investors.
Yes. And I think maybe just in case our viewers are getting nervous, in particular, if they're financial advisors, et cetera, that AI might put them out of a job. I am so hard pressed to imagine a world where a client who's just lost a spouse or is planning for their child's future and saving for education or the myriad of life events, and your point, things are actually getting more complicated, not less, is not going to need to look another human being in the eye and be reassured that their financial plan is sound and that they are on track and help them navigate that. So I think the technology is it is an enabler. It's going to allow us to do things faster, better, smarter. It's going to help with product development, et cetera. But the human engagement and that trust and that confidence, as you know, to keep people invested at the very moment they want to just sell it all and go to cash, which we all know is the worst moment, that's not going away.
It's very analogous to, I know our colleague Stephanie Aliaga, who really leads our AI research in Market Insights, was telling me about the demand for radiologists, which is actually, you think it'd go down because of the ability of AI to do even so much better on scans. But actually, the demand for radiologists is through the roofs because there's so many more things you can do now.
Yes.
But you have to talk to people about these issues, and you have to be able to communicate with people, and that really increases the need for human empathy and human communication. And I think that's absolutely, I think, going to be the case in the financial industry.
Well, and I think that's the reason why, at the same time, we're making such heavy investments in technology and data, and that we're also making huge investments in human capital to work with clients.
Yeah.
It's not one at the expense of the other.
Yep. Okay, two other questions. One sort of deep one, one quick one. The deep question is, well, how did you know you've got a wonderful career and you're in a wonderful position, but how did you end up here?
Oh, the short answer is I started at J.P. Morgan right out of school. I was an analyst in our investment bank, and about a year later came to the asset management business by way of someone who was in a very senior position who I met during campus recruiting. So for those young people listening, you never know who you're impressing and when you're impressing them and when they're going to remember you and at that point ring you up on the phone and say, come over here and meet some folks. And then I've grown up professionally inside J.P. Morgan Asset Management in a myriad of client roles and then a myriad of client leadership roles. And I think why that has been so important and impactful in my current role now leading all of the Americas is because I've been able to see client problems through so many different lenses, different stages of my career, but also different client types, different geographies, and really being able to understand their challenges end to end. I do think one of the things J.P. Morgan Asset Management does better than anyone else is the way we are organized, where the client organization has an equal seat at the table with our investors, with our portfolio managers, research analysts, and traders. And you see it. It allows us to get client pain points and client opportunities faster to our teams who are building products, building solutions, building education, so that we can respond faster and be at the forefront of innovation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and I also feel that you know, I've now been 18 years with J.P. Morgan, and just, you know, every year you sort of learn something more about the business as well as all your colleagues, and it's just, you know, increasingly rewarding.
Well, the pace of innovation, which I know people probably say every decade, this is the greatest amount of innovation, but at least for my three decades in asset management, I've never seen anything like what we've experienced kind of since COVID, the last 5 to 7 years, which was brewing before that. But so like that ability to be so tight with taking the client feedback and being able to very thoughtfully execute on it to solve problems collectively as a business, like all joined up, all aligned, I think is a massive competitive advantage and something that we've gotten quite good at.
Well, okay, last question. And now I don't know how you would actually have time to read a book, listen to a podcast, watch a movie.
Well, I fly a lot like you do.
Okay,
so
all
that's
right. So
where maybe, I have
maybe
that time.
Maybe that's, so in the midst of your travels, is there any book or movie or podcast or industry piece that you would recommend?
So this is going to sound self-serving to you, and I'm not saying it for any other reason than I totally mean. Alternative Realities is my go-to podcast because like everyone else, I am a student of the markets and I learned something new that I can use every time. You and Aaron do a fabulous job with that. I just read 1929, Andrew Ross Sorkin's book. It's a, you know, it's a big book. If you haven't seen it, but I was on a 5.5 hour flight. I read it from the minute I sat down until 10 minutes before we landed when I closed it. It is such a fabulous read. And I'm I love history. I think what you can learn, you know, for nearly 100 years ago, there are a lot of lessons that are still incredibly pertinent today, and probably even more so because of the technology we talked about, the speed of how things happen, which was quite different back then. But it's a fabulous read. If you haven't read it yet and you've got a long trip coming up, put it in your bag.
I will have to. I often recommend to people who are new to the industry, who are actually too young to remember the 2008 crash, Andrew Ross Sorkin's book on Too Big to Fail was
incredible.
That was the best historical record, really in real time of what was going on.
Yeah.
But I also, you know, I also would recommend there's a book on the great stock market crash of 1929 by John Kenneth Galbraith, which was written many years ago, probably in the 1950s.
Okay.
But it's a shorter tome than Andrew Ross Sorkin's, but it's I'd be really interested to see how those two compare.
Okay, I'm going
to
write it down when we're finished with this, and I'll read it over the holidays because I have another flight.
Because Galbraith was a great writer. Well, listen, Andrew, this has been so much fun.
It has been fun. Thank you for having me, thank you and your team for all of the extraordinary work you do. I think on behalf of everyone listening, you make us all smarter, you keep us calm, and you give us really actionable things to think about and do for our portfolios and our clients' portfolios, so we appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Andrea. Well, this episode is the last Insights Now episode for 2025, but don't worry, we should be back shortly in the new year. To all our viewers and listeners, thank you for tuning in today and speak with you soon.
This material is for information purposes only. The views, opinions, and statements of financial market trends that are based on current market conditions are those of the speaker and may differ from those expressed J.P. Morgan Asset Management, or by other areas of J.P. Morgan Chase & Co. Any companies referenced are shown for illustrative purposes only and are not intended as a recommendation. We believe the information provided here is reliable, but should not be assumed to be accurate or complete. The views and strategies described may not be suitable for all investors. This content is intended for information only based on assumptions and current market conditions and are subject to change. No warranty of accuracy is given. This content does not contain sufficient information to support investment decisions. It is not to be construed as research, legal, regulatory, tax, accounting, or investment advice. Investments involve risks. Investors should seek professional advice or make an independent evaluation before investing. The value of investments and the income from them may fluctuate, including loss of capital. Past performance and yield are not indicative of current or future results. Forecasts and estimates may or may not come to pass. J.P. Morgan Asset Management is the asset management business of J.P. Morgan Chase & Company and its affiliates worldwide.